It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Acast, on iTunes and now on Future Radio in Norwich. I hope you've caught your breath because it was a fast, furious and a whole load of fun in China at the weekend and we loved it. We have a top panel to discuss the action to Richard Baxter, Stephen Rust and Kyle Cumbers. We'll be going through the delights of Shanghai. Rich, let's come to you first. That race, give us a noise or a word to sum it up.
Wow.
That's a good one.
You said a word.
No, it's fine. I wasn't criticising. It was good. It was an epic, wasn't it? But given we're three races in, they have kind of got better as we've gone along, I suppose, haven't they?
Yeah, I was saying to the guys, I don't think we've had a bad race this season, really. There's been excitement in all of them. The racing's been good. And even qualifying was exciting as well, so...
Yeah, we'll get onto that most definitely. Steve, did you enjoy that one?
It was good. I think it was probably one of the best races we've had, actually, this season. And I sort of think for the next race at Russia, I think it's a case of top that.
Oof, which would be nice, because Sochi hasn't really done a lot for us recently. But we'll get into that in the following podcast later on in the fortnight's break. Kyle, bodes well in general. It was kind of dominated at the top end, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean... From second backwards, it was a brilliant race. But Rosberg took advantage of the chaos behind him and got a big lead and drove off to sunset. It was just chaotic. From you didn't know where people were or why they were there, and it was brilliant.
Even Nico was bored of what he was doing, I think, because at one point he almost went off the track and he hadn't done anything for about an hour, so maybe he was just getting him bored. But I asked it first in the last few weeks. I'm going to do it again. Anyone going to start believing that this could be Nico's year? You know, from the moment I said there's no way he'd do it, away he goes. Anyone?
Can I partially sit on the fence with a remark on this?
Of course you can, Steve.
I think it's from the Hamilton camp. It's starting to look a bit worrying. I think you've got to look at the bigger picture. It's now 8 races that Rosberg has now won. You take into consideration last season. I think from Hamilton's side of the garage, I think you've got to be seriously concerned. Because psychologically, even though he probably doesn't say that, that's got to affect him. And he's one gearbox down, which is not a help. There's more races and so on and so forth. 36 points behind. I mean, it's bigger than what he had in 2014, which he overturned. I just think it's starting to look like if it's going to be one season only that Rosberg wins a championship in his career, it's quite possibly could be this one.
Yes, you see? Six races wins on the bounce, I think it is, isn't it now? He's now got more wins than Sir Stirling Moss, so I think it's 17. So he's won more than any other driver who hasn't won a driver's title.
I was talking about that today. Is that a record you want?
Well, he might not have it by the end of the season. True. That's the crazy thing, isn't it?
For sort of most races without a championship win, is that a good record? Or is that
no?
I don't know. It's obviously it's good that you've won so many races, but the fact you haven't won a championship.
I guess it depends what car you're in, doesn't it? And if you're in a car that could have won the championship, or again, who your teammate is, ultimately. But how are you seeing this? Because I mean, it was rope-a-dope after the last race in Bahrain, and now from Lewis, and now we've got Lewis saying, well, actually, I've got no more jokers left now. And we're only one race further down the line.
Yeah, it's looking more likely as it goes on that it's going to Rosberg. But we saw in qualifying, Hamilton had an engine problem. He had, of course, a gearbox problem even before the practice because they changed that. And you think, if you can get, you know, this technical issues, Rosberg can as well. I mean, anything can happen. In 2014, like Steve mentioned earlier, we saw Hamilton with... about 3 or 4 races in a row, wasn't it, where he had some sort of problem with the car. Obviously, it's different car and then different engine as well. But you just don't know those things could arise for Rosberg. You just don't have a clue anything can happen. It's not over yet. I think it'd be daft to say three races in, it's over. But, you know, like Steve mentioned as well, the momentum is definitely with Rosberg at the minute.
I mean, we want to talk about Lewis getting his act together, but I guess as Richard's kind of said, he's not had much luck, has he? Especially in the last two races. There's not really a lot else he could have done, really.
I think I'm sort of not particularly worried as a Hamilton fan, because he's had two poles, the first two races. Obviously, he didn't get a chance to do that this weekend. And it's really just been the bad starts. He had a good start this weekend, but obviously, until the second corner. I think it's just a bit of a bad run at the moment. And we could be sitting here in 2 weeks and Rosberg engine could blow up, Hamilton could win, and he could be 11 points behind. And game on. I think it's just still very early. Still 18 races to go, which is a crazy amount of races.
Yeah.
That was a whole season just a few years ago.
It was. There was a great tweet from Pablo Elizalde, Ellie GP. Does he write for Autosport?
He's Motorsport.
Motorsport. Is he motorsport.com? Well, it's a bit of a talent drain there. He tweeted during the race, Hamilton should stop again and put on his wet tyres just so he can try all the tyres he has, because he was working through them a treat. And, I mean, they tried something with the sort of two pit stops in two laps, wasn't it? Pretty much. Super softs and then the softs just to try and get them out of the way under the safety car. Didn't work, much like most other things.
It turned out to be pointless in the end as well, because he later went onto the mediums. And
I guess he kind of proved with the start why you don't really want to be at the back in a start at the grid, because you just can't avoid things. But we'll maybe come on to the start in a bit. In terms of Mercedes, are we seeing any signs that this isn't a Mercedes dominated championship this year? We've had a lot of talk about how Ferrari have closed the gap, they'll really challenge, and they're not, are they?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, Red Bull looked quicker this weekend, but we've seen that sort of thing before, where just one track can just favour a particular team that hasn't necessarily shown much so far. I mean, Ferrari didn't really sort of look in it on Saturday. They had a bit of a mixed race, but afterwards, when I sort of looked at all of their sort of statistics and that, I mean, their race pace didn't really actually look that competitive to Mercedes. So I don't really see any signs that of that to be the case at all, to be honest.
I think I heard that Toto Wolff said from their GPS data that Ferrari looked like they turned down their engines with the reliability problems they had. But it has been like Mercedes talking Ferrari up the last few weeks. So we just need, it'd be nice to have a sort of clean race from Ferrari, because they always seem to be involved in first lap collisions or reliability problems or being held up. So it'd be interesting to say if Vettel got in the lead and see the pace difference then. But
yeah, I don't know, because on Saturday we could have had the chance of a Ferrari on pole, because I think that both of them at the penultimate corner, the hairpin end of the straight, Vettel and Raikkonen, who were kind of following each other on the road, both ran a bit wide, so lost a few tenths. Of course, you know, they ended up starting, was it third and fourth, I think, in the end, so a little bit further down. But I mean, they could have, you know, been on the front row for sure if they hadn't run wide. And I mean, we saw Ricciardo jump into the lead, and if a Ferrari was up there, you think it could have done the same. And we know, it's going to sound strange after the start of that race, but they are very good at working as a team, Ferrari, so they could always do a kind of bit of a counter attack on Mercedes.
We had cars falling apart left, right and centre, pretty much bashing into them. All 22 finished, which really didn't look on probably, you know, as early as a couple of laps into the race, to be honest. So that's impressive in a way. Let's touch on qualifying, shall we? The old qualifying format was back. The crescendos at the end of each session, which I think we had all missed, because I did like that, I must admit. Everyone happy about that?
Thrilled. Definitely thrilled.
Yeah, I just love the checker flags down. This is a
last shot.
Boom. Cars coming across the line every 5 seconds or whatever. Yeah, it's just, yeah, that's qualifying.
I mean, we had no issue with the grid at the end of the race either, did we? I mean, it gave us a good race. It didn't hinder anything there.
Well, that's it. I mean, and at the end of the day, the effort that some of the drivers put in was rewarded for a good finish. You know, a good starting position, shall we say, because it wasn't necessarily the finish. But no, it was exciting. It was good. And of course, a little bit of rain involved as well just spiced it up nicely.
Perfect weekend, eh? Perfect weekend. Okay, you're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Acast and on Future Radio. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Okie kokie, we have sort of spoken a little bit about them in passing so far, but let's stop off at the Ferrari garage, have a little look around, and what we can see in the corner there, yeah, it's Sebastian Vettel. He's still arguing with Daniil Kvyat really forcefully about what happened at the start. Before we get into why he's doing that, what did we make of the start?
Crazy. It was just cars everywhere.
Brilliant.
It was exciting. I think that was must have been one of the hardest things to commentate on because so much was going on. And
it took them a long time to get the replays together, I thought, actually, because normally they're quite quick. It seemed we were sort of getting 4 or 5 laps in and we hadn't even seen what happened at the start yet.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy like that, but to be honest, it kind of continued for the whole of the first lap, didn't it? So, I mean, they didn't have enough time to get replays, I suppose. But no, it was exciting. That's what you want to see from Formula 1. The fact that they're not just saying, oh, I'll settle for this position and keep going. They're actually, no, I'm going to get ahead of you and really fight for that. So that's good.
So in that case, Daniil Kvyat was perfectly fine in what he did and Sebastian had nothing to complain about?
No, it's the famous quote from Senna that all the drivers love. You know, if you see the gap, you don't go for it. You're not a racing driver. And there was a gap and it was big enough for a Red Bull. Kvyat went for it. And it might have been an aggressive move, but he had to overtake. There was space. Vettel could have stayed where he was and it would have been fine. And at the end of the day, if Kvyat went in the side for him, it's Kvyat's race lost as well. So, Vettel's kind of... I think that was the shouting. I read on BBC today, they were saying, I'm shouting at you to divert attention from me. And you think that's exactly what it was. It was just big bosses there looking down and he wasn't too pleased.
Yeah, the big Ferrari bosses were in town, weren't they, Carl?
Yeah, well, Marchionne, so I think he pretty much said that the start of the season hasn't been good enough, so obviously that puts pressure on Riva Bene and then puts pressure on the ones below. But I think, I don't wonder if Vettel was more worried what the reaction was going to be with two Ferraris colliding.
Yeah.
And then it actually was, because they both ended up finishing the race. There wasn't actually much to talk about. Nobody really talked about it afterwards, so I think he's worried about that. And as he's had in the past with Webber, I suppose he's a bit worried for that, but
it did seem to diffuse after the race once he kind of realised it wasn't too bad. I think he started, you know, joking with Kvyat and the pen and things like that.
On Kvyat's side, I'm sure he'd be more worried about telling off from Helmut Marko if he didn't go for that gap than what Vettel was telling him. So
yeah, well, that's exactly the point, wasn't it? And ultimately, it was just a shame. That's the problem when you're in that situation. We see it so often. Your car comes up on your inside, someone's trying to get around the corner on your outside, you've got nowhere to go, the space diminishes in the middle and you end up colliding. And it was Seb's turn.
Yeah, I mean, that can quite often happen, but I just thought that it was just totally ridiculous, his argument. I just didn't think he had a leg to stand on at all. I mean, Kvyat was completely right. You know, it was a great opportunist overtaking manoeuvre. And I think it just either just took Seb by complete surprise and he sort of maybe darted a little bit to the left and went into Raikkonen, or, I mean, I haven't seen the onboard from him, or he just used that as a blame for accidentally not looking to his left where Raikkonen was and going into him. I think it was more because the radio message that he said almost immediately afterwards, you could kind of tell by the tone of his voice that he was concerned that, you know, for going into his teammate, which is the worst thing for any team, really, that was what he was most worried about. And I think he was just trying to use it as a bit of a divertory sort of tactic. But I thought it was just totally pointless.
It was, and he probably an overreaction, as you mentioned, Carl, because he, you know, wasn't that bad. It was an accident. It was a racing incident. I don't think there was any particular major issue, although I guess that doesn't take away from the pressure. I mean, it wasn't like he'd been told to let someone through or had been told to hold up a teammate or leave a teammate in front of him and overtake him. So he's done worse, to be honest, Seb. You've done far worse than that. Don't get worried about it. It's fine. And I think we know why he was shouting. That said, I'm absolutely delighted. I was wondering, while they were all sat in the green room, and I'm so delighted he brought it up and they had it out in English on the cameras. Brilliant. Well done, Seb. No issue for that. He did keep losing his front wing, didn't he? I think he was losing bits of it all through the race. There was bits falling off that wing. The other brilliant moment from Seb with what happened in the pit lane Nico Hülkenberg sort of taking his time, but I think he needed the time in terms of the pit stop. Were they doubling up Force India? I'm not sure.
He sort of said afterwards that he saw it was a bit chaotic in there, so he thought it'd
brilliant. The considerate Formula One driver.
Yeah, which I thought that's just a cover story for Force India saying back
we're
up
not,
a little bit.
Yeah, we're not ready. Hang on. And, so, but I mean, Seb goes down the outside, but stays in the pit lane in the pit approach because obviously at that point he could do whatever speed he wanted. No recrimination. He was perfectly within the rules. Jensen Button afterwards said, "Oh, because he was behind Hülkenberg, wasn't he? So he also got overtaken." He said, "Oh, I didn't realise you could do that," which I think probably speaks more for Seb and probably quite a bit for Jensen. To be honest, he didn't know. It was just brilliant to see. I loved it.
It was good, and to be honest, after the first little incident that Vettel had, he kind of had to say, "Look, I'm a fighter," to the team as he was coming in. But you get that sometimes. You just, why are you going so slow? Because there wasn't really much need for it because you're not actually at the pit limiter. But it was good that he went past. It's good to see. And again, more action in the China pit lane. 2007 with Hamilton, of course. That was
where he kind of lost the championship, you could argue.
Yeah, the entry, which is now tarmacked. He ended up in the gravel. McLaren kept him on an old set of wet tyres for far too long. And so I think it should be called Hamilton's pit lane now, really sure. Or entry put.
The Lewis Hamilton pit lane. He'd like that, I'm sure. So presumably Vettel claimed two places in the pit lane then because he overtook them both?
Yes, he did, yeah.
Under the safety car. It was the only place on the circuit he could overtake them, maybe apart from the pit stops, of course. So well done, Seb. I can't argue with that. Brilliant. Red Bull, you kind of touched on them earlier, Steve. They were first and third off the start, effectively. They had wonderful starts. Daniel Ricciardo was really on it all weekend, and again he was unfortunate, but he kind of had the car to get away with it because he punctured after three laps, wasn't it? It was quite early on, two laps. There's something about this because I thought the Renault would, well, Renault Taco, the watch engine would struggle around China because of the power it'd need, but no, it didn't. It's bang on.
It was strange, really, because I mean they had a really good weekend all in all. You know, I mean they had a great qualifying.
P2 for Ricciardo.
And sort of finished up with a really good Sunday as well. I mean they were really strong in the race. I mean that they were, you know, they were strong on all of their stints and probably arguably the closest really to Rosberg, you know, in that sense with Ferrari being a bit out of the picture. But yeah, I don't know whether they were just maybe running a bit little less downforce and making the most of the long straights and things like that. I don't know. I mean, you would expect it to have struggled a little bit with the power deficit, but they were pretty strong.
So where do we go from this? Are Red Bull challenging Ferrari or are they just replacing Williams?
I think it will depend on the track because I think they must have had a bit of a deficit down the straight. But also, they must have been gaining so much time in the short, squiggly bits of the track. So you think, like places like Monaco and Singapore later in the year and small tracks, they must be, I think they'll be a contender for the win. So I think they're challenging Ferrari at the moment.
Oh, it's exciting. Renault, Rich, so I've left this one for you. They're not challenging anything. I mean, they from a slightly promising opening weekend, they've kind of fallen off a cliff a bit. And Jolyon Palmer called it the worst weekend of his career. I mean, it all kind of went wrong. And I mean, given that in Bahrain he didn't actually make the start because of his car, I mean, you'd have thought that would have been worse. But there we go.
Yeah, it was tricky. It's kind of hard to say too much because I might have had a sneaky prediction for the qualifying, but.
Worry about that in the other podcast.
Yeah. But no, it was a bit of a shocker for both of them, really, because last race out in Bahrain we had Magnussen struggling to get past Manor, and this time they were kind of not really anywhere. You know, Palmer finished effectively last, and it wasn't great. And you said about Red Bull with the watch engine, but it shows how much that's actually improved when you look where Renault came, because their engine obviously hasn't got much power still at all, and they are really struggling at the back, unfortunately. But I still do like their car. I think it's a really good looking car just because it's bright yellow.
fair enough. And as I have to say with Jolyon Palmer, it did really hit home that he is an Ipswich fan when he appeared in the East Anglian Daily Times with them talking about his love of Ipswich town. So the strongest Norfolk link on the Formula One grid, and he's an Ipswich fan. It's It's a sorry state of affairs, really. Sorry state of affairs. So is the Renault engine that Renault have much different to the Tag Heuer engine that Red Bull have?
I think it's the same, from what I understand, but...
With a tweak here or there?
Yeah, because I heard the old Ilmor guy was going to get involved, and I thought that was just on the watch-powered engine, but I think it's for all of Renault's engines slash Tag watch. So I think it's the same engine, so it sort of shows how far they're behind.
It shows how well Red Bull have done. That's what it shows. Yes. Yeah, it does, to be in fairness, with their aero, definitely. Force India, I've got a little note here of Nico Hülkenberg's wheel falling off in qualifying. It just literally came off, very random. And then his radio message, where he basically asked halfway through the race, I think maybe we should consider the alternative tyre strategy, at which point his engineer said, yeah, we're on that. So poor old Force India, but there we go. And Pirelli, the curious thing for me, was it the softs where the cars would only last 12 laps basically on the softs, and that seemed to surprise and catch everyone out? I mean, predominantly with Lewis Hamilton, because that's why he chucked the super softs on and then went straight back onto the softs, and then it's like, oh no, they only last 12 laps. And what was it? Was it disrupted free practice running that meant they didn't know?
Well, the thing is like, because some people are sort of saying, oh, you know, the tyres don't seem really lasting as good as last year, or is it to do with the cars, is it this? But because we've got this new tyre rule where you can largely choose what you want to run, you know, there's some races we're going to where we would normally have medium and hards, and people are going out there on super softs and then wondering why you're only getting half a dozen laps. There's a reason for that. It's because that's not what Pirelli would have chose if we had the old system. So I'm not entirely sort of sold on this new rule, even though Kyle came up.
Oh no, Kyle! Kyle, respond. There was obviously a lot of rain in practice. Did the teams get caught out this weekend, or was there something else there?
I think they are. I think they are each race, because I think kind of time the rubber is down on the track. I think they're finding some tyres working on certain cars and some tyres aren't. So I think it's great. It's causing more strategy options and different cars on different tyres at different times. It's brilliant.
Well, there we go. Yeah. There we go. It's a great. You're in the middle of this, Rich. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, I feel like Nico Rosberg in the green room. But it's an interesting rule. I do enjoy it, having the drivers choose their own tyres. It gives them a bit more, you know, tactical control. McLaren, I think, were the first team to go onto the mediums, and they were saying actually there's good pace on the mediums. Then you had a few other cars go on. And then it seemed too late, and once the track cooled down and the mediums weren't so effective, that Hamilton ended up on them, being told to push when he's, I am. And it's, you know, it was something more interesting radio, definitely. But I do enjoy it. I also see what Steve means with, well, you can't complain about a tyre that's designed to do five laps, only lasting five laps, you know, whatever. It's that, you know, they should choose tyres more effectively.
Well, they're clearly pushing it, because there were a lot of ruptured tyres during practice, wasn't there? A lot of them. Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, this section now coming up is one lovingly named by David Tillier, I would say. The good, the badoa, and the ugly. This is the NRF1 podcast with Acast and with Future Radio, and it is our Of the Weekends. We start with the driver. Let's have your opening bids, please. I have three letters written down here. I'm going to be surprised if anyone argues with them. Would you want to all say it in one go? Ready? On three. One, two, three. Say the name of who your driver of the week is. Weekend was. Go. One, two, three.
Ricciardo.
Ah! Oh! And Steve just waiting to pounce.
Just waiting for what?
What was going to be said.
Go on, Steve. Who was your driver of the weekend?
It was really difficult, because there was just so many really good drives out there. I mean, it would be easy to just say, oh, Rosberg, but then I don't really think that's particularly worthy. I mean, I sort of want to sort of say one of the Red Bull drivers, but then there's sort of, I mean, you could argue really with all of the troubles Hamilton had with his damage to his car, etc., and countless pit stops, I mean, to come through to seven, I mean, is good. So I don't know, but let's just go with Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton, yeah. With the first call. I have to say, I thought everyone would say Ricciardo, but so let's go with you, Rich.
Yeah, I thought to qualify second, really impressive. he's actually been one of the best drivers this season so far. And I mean, he did have a puncture on lap three or whatever it was, and he obviously fell back quite a long way, but safety car a little while after. But I just think there could have been so much more from the race if he hadn't had that puncture, because he would have had to pit earlier than Rosberg. But I mean, he would have still had decent, you know, fairly decent pace anyway, and it could have made the race even more exciting, possibly. But I mean, yeah, to still get up to fourth after falling pretty much to the back of the field, I thought that was a good drive, and well done him.
Well, it would have been my shout, probably based, as Rich said, on the fact that he did puncture so early, but the safety car did close it all up.
Yeah,
but that's not your vote.
I kind of went to give it because I saw your notes then, Rick. So
how dare you? Good man. No, that's the way.
But probably over the whole weekend, Saturday and Sunday, probably was Ricciardo because he was qualifying. But Sunday probably would go Kvyat. I just thought it was a strong race, and
he was kind of the man of, well, I suppose between him and Seb, they were the key sort of discussion points over the course of the entire race, really, weren't they, here, there, and everywhere?
Yeah, and I just thought partly because the first corner as well, how well he done to take the opportunity. Yeah. So, but I think, yeah, like I said, both Red Bull drivers had a really good weekend. So.
All right, then. How about team of the weekend? Come on, this time, surely. On three. One, two, three.
Red Bull.
Not very good at this. Steve?
Red Bull.
Right, okay. I mean, quite clearly, as we've said, and as I said, we've said that the car looks like a winner, possibly, which would be a very interesting thing over the course of the rest of the campaign. How about our pastor stroke goat of the weekend? A bit more tricky, this one.
I'm going to go Vettel, just for his arguments afterwards, really.
It was a bit all over the place, lots of damage to his wing.
To be honest, that was what I was going to go for, just purely for ridiculousness of the whole race and afterwards for him. So that would be my vote too.
I mean, to switch places with you, Steve, I actually had Lewis Hamilton down for this, because not necessarily because he was bad or he did something wrong. It was just all over the place, and it was just bumping into things. He wasn't getting the rub of the green. He had to drive over his own front wing, and then he had to drive a dog of a car that had been knocked around, or certainly felt like it had been knocked around. It was just one of those weekends, and you know, probably the third one of those weekends he's now had.
I've kind of got two I can think of.
I love it.
One is Ferrari for everything that we've previously discussed. The second one is the mechanic who didn't properly put on Hülkenberg's tyre in qualifying, his wheel, because that cost us a real good shootout in Q2 to get into Q3. Because Alonso's reaction when he said, "Oh, you know, yellow flag, red flag, whatever it was, session's over," and it was like, great. So now we've got four or five cars wanting to get into Q3, which we're now not going to see a fight for, which was quite disappointing, really.
Great shout. I think that gets it. Great shout, Rich. Top work. Okay, well, just leaves a highlight then. Anything that we haven't discussed that people want to bring out as a highlight, or something we have discussed?
That was basically what I said with Alonso's reaction to being told he's not going through, his almost scream down the road. That was my highlight, because it still shows his passion he's got, and that he really still wants to do well. So yeah, that was my personal highlight.
Johnny Herbert was probably smiling at that news as well. Anyone else?
I think probably Hamilton's overtake of Bottas when he went around the outside to be in the inside. Well, that's good. And then also Ricciardo's overtake on Hamilton himself. Well, it's just some good overtaking this weekend. So, yeah, they were my highlights.
I'd just say, just for one highlight, just Kvyat's move at the start on Vettel, you know, because it was just a good swoop down the inside, and then obviously all the carnage that it caused afterwards.
He's still actually really young as well, isn't he, Kvyat? Because he seems like he's been around for years, but he's something about...
He was the youngest ever point scorer in Australia in his first race, I think, because Verstappen overtook that this year. So
third season? So might have been...
Yeah. Toro Rosso won in Red Bull.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yes, it's 19, I think, when you start.
19.
So,
which was very young at the time, but then Max Verstappen changed it.
Changed the game, and then changed the rules, because no one else that young can come in ever again. But yeah, he's still so young. Absolutely. Spot on. I love the pit lane overtake, as I mentioned. The green room was brilliant, especially if Nico Rosberg was just sort of watching a little bit awkwardly, just sort of looking out the corner of his eyes. And then one of them did Kvyat give Vettel a pat on the back? Was it just as they left? One of them gave someone a pat on the back. It was like, Brilliant. Bring out the patronisation. That's not a word. Bring out the
That will be a word now. We've just invented a new word because we are the future on NRF on podcast.
Yeah,
so.
I bring on the patronisation. It's baby brain. You get, this is what you're stuck with. Sorry. Brilliant. I think we've wrapped it all up. Great stuff. Well, plugs time. NRF1.UK for all our blogs, tips and more. Not the best weekend in terms of Kyle's tips, having bigged them up, but we'll discuss that in our preview podcast looking ahead to Russia, along with the Prediction League update. So keep an eye out for that. Well, sure, if anyone of these guys want to cling in some blogs, we'll have some blogs. I might write a blog, possibly. I've done my one for the year, but there might be another one coming. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at the NRF1, facebook.com/NRF1podcast, or you can always get in touch via an email, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. And of course, we have our tweets and social section in our preview podcast. That will be coming up soon. So if there's anything you want us to discuss, if there's a opinion that you really want to put forward, and then we can either agree or disagree or whatever, then all you need to do, get in touch on one by one of those means, and we will discuss it in the next podcast. But yeah, that's it. We will preview Russia, talk about the Prediction League and all that sort of stuff in our podcast looking ahead to Sochi. That will be coming up in the next week or so. But in the meantime, thank you, Rich. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks to the person hooting outside. Thank you to Acast, to Future Radio, and to iTunes. We will be back very shortly. In the meantime, what a race. Relive it if you want. Watch the highlights. It was a cracker in China. Hopefully, Russia will deliver the goods in a week or so's time. Until then, thanks for listening, and goodbye.